Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, welcome everybody to today's episode of Relationship Marketing 101. I am your host, Gina Gaudio Graves, the Dean and Founder of the IAMUniversity.com, and I have my co-host, Jennifer Carter from EmpoweringWomenInBusiness.com with us today, and a very special guest, one of my really good friends. But Jennifer, welcome to the show, and I'll get to my guest in just a minute.
Fantastic. Thank you, Gina. It is awesome to be here today with you, with our special guest, and with everybody who's listening. I am, Gina, especially excited about today's topic because it is something that's near and dear to my heart, and I am on a mission about this particular topic, and that is about becoming fearless. Myself, you, me, and everybody that we reach out and touch in business and in our personal lives, if we were fearless in business, in life, if we were no longer afraid to fail, what could we do? And the answer is pretty obvious in that if you look at anybody and everybody who's ever succeeded in anything, a big part of what is required for them to succeed, a big part of what allowed them to succeed is them becoming fearless and unafraid to fail, unafraid to make mistakes, unafraid to move forward, and not paying attention to the fears, which we have all kinds of fears that can sometimes stop us. Just really quickly, stop and take a moment to think about the times in your life when you may have stopped from doing something and therefore the results weren't that good. Let me give you a few examples here. Fear can sometimes stop us from taking action of something. We don't know which way to go, so we're frozen in fear. Sometimes fear causes us to be indecisive, and when we're indecisive, guess what? Sometimes those decisions are made for us, and they're not always the right decisions. So ask yourself, what would your business be like if you were fearless? If you were no longer afraid to fail, you were willing to fail forward fast, you felt the fear and did it anyway. And that's what today's show is all about. So as we get into this, we have, as Gina mentioned, a very special guest that she's going to introduce. And the three of us, we're going to talk about this, and by the end of the show today, we're going to not only talk about all the problems that fear brings up, but more importantly, we're going to talk about how to get over that fear and move forward fast. So, Gina, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest today?
Well, I'm hoping that the line that I just unmuted is our special guest. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am, Gina. I'm right here.
Yay! Well, I'm going to start out by saying a little bit more about the history that I have with this guy. Our special guest today is a guy by the name of Scott Becker. And Scott and I first met a couple years ago in the weirdest way, Jennifer. Scott was one of my customers. He had actually come into my world having downloaded a product that was originally put out by one of my interns. And that introduced him to me because of an audio recording I had done in the product. He came over to my site. He bought one of my products, a little $10 ebook. But when he got it, for some reason, the download didn't work. So Scott did what any resourceful person would do, looked for a phone number, picked up the phone, and he called. Well, this was a Tuesday, and that's important. So I get on the phone, and of course, I'm really apologetic, and I'm asking him a little bit about who he is and what he does. And back then, Scott really wasn't an internet marketer or an online business owner. In fact, he was really just looking at how he could improve himself, and the product he had bought was very much a self-improvement product, not a product for an entrepreneur specifically. So I felt so bad about the download not working that I invited Scott to attend an event I was holding in Sandusky, Ohio, just a couple days later. I said, look, I don't know if you can get from where you're at to Ohio, but if you can, please come be my guest. Well, that weekend, I think, forever changed Scott's life. And since then, he has become one of the most passionate marketers I have ever met. He went through so many struggles that first year of getting his business up, running, and getting it really doing something. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about today. But no matter what kind of struggles he went through, he persevered. He really went full speed ahead and got the job done. No matter how many ups or downs he had, he figured it out. And really, that is what has made him successful today. In the process, we've become really good friends, as well as my being his mentor. But I really think of Scott as a friend. So I am so honored to have him here as my guest. Please welcome Scott Becker from YourOnlineHandyman.com. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you very much, Gina. Thank you.
So how much has your life changed since Sandusky?
Oh, my life has changed tremendously. Tremendously. I've fallen in love with online marketing ever since then, totally unexpectedly. And it's been a struggle for me. It's been a major struggle. Coming from nowhere to getting it rolling down the track, moving online, it's just been a tremendous change. I mean, this is what I want to do with my life, and just figuring out all the parts, the information overload, there's just so much. That's why I'm lucky to have found someone like you right off the bat. That always, to me, was a sign, because I have met other people along the ways, and no one's been like you, Gina.
Well, and it's really funny how the law of attraction has worked in your world, even right down to this show. I called you 10 minutes before the show got started and said, Scott, what are you doing the next hour and a half? Mm-hmm. And as luck would have it, you happened to have time, because you were going to be here just listening, mm-hmm. that you could actually be a guest on my show.
Well, that's true.
9 times out of 10, you would not necessarily have been available for me to call and say, hey, what are you doing for the next hour and a half? To me, that's really another sign of the law of attraction working in your life.
That's true. What happened was I still do work offline. I work offline and online, and I kind of have both ends of my business married together. I'm a handyman offline. I fix all sorts of small jobs. I'm not a contractor where I do large jobs. I like doing small jobs. It's just my niche. That's what I do online as well, and I still do work offline. I need the money from both, and I live in New York also, which is kind of expensive. And just today, I happened to have a cancellation, last-minute cancellation offline, which brought me here, which I said to myself, what am I going to do? And I just was setting myself up here on the couch to listen to my good friend Gina, which would be my first option if I'm home. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, 10 minutes while I was looking to see who your guest and what your topic was going to be today, there you are on the phone. And that's
unbelievable.
That's me.
Well, that really brings me to where I wanted to go anyway. When we first met back a year and a half, 2 years ago, you were really only working your offline business as a handyman, right?
That's correct.
So walk us through what you did when you first got started online.
I went through everything. Excuse me. I went through all kinds of information overload. Not knowing what I wanted to do. Excuse me, the weather up here has been kind of rough, and I have some kind of thing in my throat, but I'm sure I really want to get through it.
You sound fine.
Thank you. I just jumped into a blog. I jumped into my first blog, and, you know, I got involved in an MLM online, set it up to bring in traffic with a blog into my MLM. I had never been in that MLM before, but out in Sandusky, I met a great guy who was my upline, who offered to take me under his wing, and I just jumped into that, but that wasn't right for me, so I had to switch my niche several times. And then I wound up back in my own, what I knew, which really was my passion. And
and that struggle for you was a massive one. As you went from one niche to the next, I kept saying, Scott, you've got to find your profitable passion. And you weren't really passionate about the whole nutritional thing, which is what brought you to the MLM in the first place. But the money thing really got you, and you were like, but I can make money here. I'll do it. I could be passionate about it if I wanted to be. And I think one of the big things that you saw as you started trying to do that was it felt like work as you were trying to get your blogging underway, didn't it?
Yes, very much so. Very, very much so. And that's probably why I wound up where I am now and where I will be for a good long time. It felt like work. It was hard. It was really hard. Just very, very hard. Grinded. It was grinded out. The word grind comes to mind. And now it's quite a bit easier. What I do is it's so different. I basically blog, which is really what a blog is, which is a web blog or a diary, an online diary, a lot about what I do during the day. And that's made it just tremendously easier. Instead of grinding something out and coming home and researching, you know, what is this about health or what is this about nutrition, I pretty much just put on what I do. And just the way I talk to my clients offline in their kitchens, in their homes, I talk to people online, basically the same thing, and it's just worked out differently for me. It's been much, much easier, much, much easier.
Well, and you could hear it in your voice. Every week we would get together on your coaching calls, and you could hear back then that it was work. And that told me you had not yet found that passion that was really going to fuel your business. And over the several months that we were working together, we could hear it more and more and more. And finally, about 5-6 months into it, I think one of the calls that we had, we stopped and we said, you know, Scott, something's holding you back. Something's keeping you from really even exploring what your profitable passion might be. And that was a very emotional call. It was a call that you predominantly dominated, but it was probably one of the single best calls I have ever held. And that was a call that you finally said, yeah, I do have an underlying fear. You remember that call?
Yes, I do. I remember it well. I think I've had it as far back as I can remember. I've even had it offline. I've held back offline at times that I can think of. Just on little things. Like, I basically appeal to the same clientele each time. I don't set up new advertising offline. I do this. I send out flyers and keep in touch with my list offline. And I remember times just holding back because I didn't want to fail. I remember times just I had like a stack of mail, snail mail, ready to go out, and I just didn't want to mail it. It was probably, I mean, it was good, but I just didn't want to mail it because I just didn't want to fail. I just didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to put out something and feel the hurt, feel the pain of, you know, something not working. As long as I held it in my possession, my stack that was of snail mail that was going out to my list, it wasn't going to fail. And I've seen it that way too. So,
but it wasn't going to succeed either.
Well, it wasn't going to succeed as long as I held it. Exactly. As long as I held it, it wasn't going to succeed.
Did you really consciously recognize that fear of failure back then, or was it something that was kind of subconscious, you were just kind of procrastinating about getting it out?
No, I recognized it after a certain point. I did recognize it. It didn't happen all the time, but I could see that it happened sometimes. And it got to be a point where I did recognize that. Exactly when and, you know, how far into my business, I don't know. But I just know that there were times when I just would do what you would call a procrastination, but I knew that I was procrastinating not because it was so difficult what I needed to do. It was difficult emotionally because I just didn't
want
to come back with, you know, losing. I didn't want to come back with losing, and that was hard. And
that was really what was keeping you from finding that profitable passion that you really could get into a flow with that felt less like work. Felt more like fun that would actually get results was the same thing, that fear of failure.
It's very hard. It's very, very difficult at some point. I think for some people it's harder than others. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Well, it wasn't easy for you, I'll tell you that.
It wasn't easy. I want to succeed so badly. So badly I want to succeed. And like so many people I'm sure do. And I want to succeed so badly. I mean, I'm not lazy. I'm not lazy. I'm not the kind of guy to just sit back on the couch. I'm not lazy, and I want to succeed so badly, and but I don't want to fail. You know, it's hard. And you can listen to so many things. I mean, I've listened to, you know, things like home run sluggers who have hit the most home runs but struck out the most amount of times. I've heard things like that, but it's hard to, when it's you, it's very hard to actually do it. It's just difficult.
Yes.
You know, Scott, you said something really interesting about going back to procrastination, which, of course, stops a lot of people from doing enough of what they need to do in business or anything else. And you said, you hit the nail right on the head when you said, I put that in there because you're a handyman. But you said that procrastination, it wasn't because you didn't want to do it, it wasn't because of out of laziness, but because it was difficult emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny to me how our emotions, which we're not talking about, you know, locusts or pestilence or, you know, war stopping. We're talking about our emotions stopping us because we're afraid of failing. And as you said earlier, it's easier to hold on to, well, I'm not going to fail if I don't do it, and therefore we don't. So if we can move past it, which that's what this you know show is about today. We were talking about the discussion, and Gina said, if I can get a hold of this guy, he'll be great for the show today. Because, you know, in her eyes, you're the epitome of feeling this fear of, you know, fear of failure, which is a big part of it, and then moving past it. And so it's really interesting having you on the show, and especially that you're able to, gosh, you describe the emotions that so many people go through, I think, on a daily basis, so forthrightly. And I know that we're all learning be able to learn some great things out of it. So,
and here's the one thing that was really amazing about Scott. Scott was doing all the right stuff. He was working his business every day. He was blogging every day. He was using my simple 6-step process for driving traffic every day. He was using MySpace and Facebook and really working them the way that he should be. But the one thing he wasn't doing was talking to the right audience that really resonated with his passion. That was the only thing he wasn't doing. Would you agree, Scott?
Yeah, that's very true, Gina. As you know, you are my mentor, and the beginning of what you teach and the most important things, in my opinion, are profitable passion. And I was trying to talk profitable, but I wasn't trying to talk passion.
Good way to say it.
I believe heavily in that. When I speak to new people coming online, and I do so often at conventions and different things and online and chat rooms and stuff, the most important thing is, and even for me, I have another passion, but it's not my profitable passion. It's not profitable.
Mm-hmm.
I love online things. I love techno gadgets and things like that, but that's not profitable for me right now. And, you know, you got to be in the right spot. You got to put yourself in the right spot, and you have to be profitable. And I was not doing that. I was not putting myself in a passionate spot, I should say.
And he couldn't even see that because of that underlying fear of failure. No matter how many times I could say it, he never heard my words until we could address that underlying fear.
That's very true. That's very true. And, it's a hard thing to get over. I'm not going to say, you know, that often you can't recognize it. I couldn't even recognize it when I was new online. When I was offline, I was probably much more established. I was able to recognize it better at some point, which takes a long while. But online, I was not able to recognize it. I couldn't see it. The only thing I could see was dollars and cents. And it held me back. It was very difficult.
So on that call where we finally said, okay, Scott, there's something more here, and you said, well, yeah, there really is. I'm really afraid of failure. What changed when we finally recognized that fear was there?
Okay, that's a very good question, Gina. That's an excellent question. I think it's the same thing. It's the same thing as really what happened offline. I just kind of caught up a little bit online as I did offline. And what it is it's recognizing what's holding you back. often what if you can recognize what's holding you back, if you can finally get a conscious or see it, then it's very often that's the point where you can start to cure it. It's when you don't know. It's when you don't know what your problem is or what your I hate that word, Gina. You've got.
You don't know what you don't know, Scott.
Yeah, but if you don't know what's challenging you, then you can't fix it. But if you know what's beginning to challenge you, well, then you can start to attack it head on. And that's not always going to be the final answer, but you can certainly begin to treat it once you know what the challenge is.
Right. You were really fortunate because you were working with me at the time, and I could be sitting there saying, there's something more going on, Scott, and trying to pull it out from you. For most people, especially those who are not working with a coach or a mentor, they've got to do it for themselves. And I think one of the big things for people who don't have a coach or a mentor is sitting down and saying, okay, if you're doing the right thing, but you're not seeing results, there's definitely something there that is causing the results to not happen. And you've got to sit down and try and identify it. To me, that's the single biggest, greatest benefit that you have from working with a coach or a mentor, is that they can help you to identify it. I think it would have taken you a lot longer to come to the realization that the fear of failure was what was keeping you from getting results had you not been in a program that was designed to help you do those kinds of things.
That's very true. There's nothing like working with a coach. There's nothing. Sometimes it's more difficult it is more difficult to be able to see yourself from the inside than to somebody to see you from the outside. And a coach doesn't always have to be just the exact coach. It's just someone to coach you. I mean, it can just be, you know, just someone who can coach you, someone who can see you better, you know, someone who can see you better. And that can give you an idea, because you can't always see yourself so well.
Right.
And that can definitely, that's a very valuable asset to have.
So once you recognize that this fear of failure was there staring at you smack dab in the face, how did you get rid of it?
I just went, that's a very good question. That's a very difficult question. For me, it was just a matter of constant perseverance, of trying, of just going over it, of just consciously saying to myself, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do what I need to do, I'm going to get to the spot where I need to be. I'm going to find it. I'm just going to find it. I'm kind of a person who's a glutton for punishment, and I will just hack at something until I find it. And I just persevered. I persevered and kept going instead of shutting down and letting it all go. And that's
Well, on that particular call, one of my good friends, Jimmy Davis, from My Story Marketing, was on the line with us. And Jimmy and Dennis had been two guys that I brought in to help teach you guys how to use YouTube and MySpace in combination to be able to create the story of you and get it out to the world. But he really was beneficial in helping you overcome that fear of failure, because he had been through the same thing in his business when he first got started. Well, Jimmy doesn't share that part of his story very often, and it was really fabulous to have him on the line that day to help overcome your fear of failure. And what he said to you was, in order to continue getting through and really getting results, it was imperative for you to ask yourself what your why was. Why are you doing this? What is it that you want from it? And that you needed to word it in a way that really became the thing that allowed you to persevere. And once you recognized the fear of failure and identified your why, those two things in combination with one another will allow you to persevere. But you've got to stay conscious of having that underlying fear in order to continue to take action. I think that really helped you a lot in identifying the fact that if you were looking at what your why was, then the market you were in was probably not the right one.
That's very true. And that is very true. It's a matter of figuring out why you're doing something, what you're doing something for, the reason you're doing something, the underlying reasons, and that's very, very powerful. And I'm glad you brought that up to me, Gina, because I did not consciously remember that.
Yeah, that was like the biggest point that Jimmy made on that call. And as he talked about that, you really started even sounding different on the call. About 5-6 months ago, I went back and re-listened to that call myself.
Right.
Because this is something that is not just an issue that was specific to Scott Becker. This is an issue that happens for probably better than 99% of my students. There's usually one of two big fears that come into play. There's both the fear of failure and the fear of success. People end up self-sabotaging themselves over and over again, just trying to avoid one of those two fears. And they're very closely related, extremely closely related. I think it's just a matter of some people call it a fear of failure, some people call it a fear of success. But they, in terms of the emotions that are activated by both, they are identical. So I went back and re-listened to the show, and to hear your voice at the beginning of the show, before you really put the affirmation out that says, yes, I have this fear, and then listening to you at the end of that call when you really had admitted that I have this fear and I'm going to look it square in the eye and deal with it, it sounded like a completely different person that was on the call. It didn't even sound like the same voice that had started out the call.
See, this is what's so amazing about working with somebody. I couldn't do that myself. I couldn't hear that myself. You've told me that. I've heard that today, and I've heard that, I think, once or twice before in the past. And I could not recognize that myself, but it had to be one of those subconscious type of things. And,
right.
And I couldn't recognize it, but you've told me about it, so it was. But it's interesting because if I was by myself, I wouldn't have seen that, and I find that very interesting.
And that, I really believe, was the exact precise second in time that you became empowered to actually go forward and do things, the same things you had already been doing, but in a way that really got your profitable passion involved and finally allowed you to get results.
That's very true. That's very, very true. That's basically.
So let's talk for a minute about the two things. So before that moment in time when you were doing all these things, what kind of results were you seeing?
Frustration.
Yeah, that was a biggie, wasn't it?
A lot of frustration. I don't want to give the exact numbers, but let's just say a lot of frustration. It was very frustrating. It was just.
Were you making sales at all?
At that point, no. At that point, I don't think I had earned any money online. I don't think
so. When you change things around, because now you're dealing with this fear of failure, you're going to overcome it, and you're really going to follow your why, did you start getting results? Did you make any sales?
Yeah, it was very interesting. Yes, it was very interesting. They started coming to me. The sales started coming to some. I had product sales, but I also had better sales coming to me, people wanting to be a part of my blog. And I found that very interesting. I found the people, several people had approached me who actually wanted advertising space on my blog, and I wasn't actively pursuing that. And I found,
I found that
to be very interesting. I found that to be very interesting. That was another sign, by the way. But, but what happened was we were selling some products. I wasn't pushing products very hard because with a blog, what I was doing was I was pushing readership.
Yes, you were serving.
Because right, because you had explained to me, you had thrown a number out to me at one point about how many people I really needed as a daily readership before I was going to start to, really actively sell products or sell the kind of amount that I wanted to. Well, I was really building readership, and it was funny. It was but there were some products being sold. But while I was building this readership, people started coming to me looking with their wallets open to start to purchase. And the good ones were really advertising space, and I found that to be very interesting.
That is very interesting.
Yeah,
So in terms of readership, did the numbers grow?
Dramatically. Dramatically. Just dramatically.
But you weren't doing anything different.
Yeah, I was just passionate about what I was doing.
For the first time ever, you were able to be authentic.
That was the first time I was authentic. I was passionate. I was passionate because I was not afraid of being so. And it was passion because I was not afraid of being so. And what was just interesting was people were beginning to come to me. And I found, and we were drawing people. It was great to get money to come in like that. Obviously everybody loves that. But just the conversations I was having with my readership, and you could feel the expressions coming from my readership of what was coming back from them, the emotion coming back from them, the love coming back from them. I found that very interesting.
That was even bigger than the money, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was because.
And that's because it followed your why. You weren't just doing this for money. So many people get started in their business thinking it's all about the money. And so they go into niches and whatnot because they think that they are money niches. And what I see happening over and over again is money doesn't happen. And now what do they have to fall back on? That wasn't the real why, but they never addressed it. It was something that they had to sit down and really think about. And if they really asked the question, every one of them has a different why than just plain old money. And if they're really authentic and they really take that into consideration in both choosing the market that they're going to go after and building the business that they want for themselves, boy, results happen so much easier. And they really have fun in the process. It's not work. It doesn't need to be work. It can really be fun.
It's a very interesting process. It's really very, very interesting when it happens like that. I found myself in the beginning, and I'm not getting on myself for it because I really didn't know up from down, but I found myself in the beginning trying to sit down, and it felt very much like doing a college research paper, writing a blog post.
And guess what? They read like college research papers too.
Right. And it was just, it was hard. It was just very difficult. And when you get to writing something that's just enjoyable, it's just different. It's just very, very different.
So is your business making consistent money now?
Yeah, we're making consistent money now. It's not the money that I'd like to be making eventually. It's not enough to quite get me out of my offline business, although I've decided that I want to keep both my offline and my online. But we are selling products, and we are selling a steady stream of products. Not enough to get me out, not the numbers that I wanted yet, but it's been a steady stream. But it's been less than a year for me. So,
well, we can talk about what you can do to amp things up, Scott, but I am so proud of you. Jennifer, what do you want to know from Scott?
Well, this is interesting because, Scott, you said a few minutes ago that you weren't really doing anything different when that shift happened, but people started coming to you. And that, you know, the money started flowing because it wasn't because you were going after it. People started coming to you. And I would submit that, and of course we've already said this, but you absolutely, something was being done differently, and that is the feelings or the vibes that were coming from you. And people can read that in us, whether we're talking to them face-to-face or whether we're talking to them through our blog or on the air. People can read that. They can read what we're feeling and what we're really what's really going on inside of us, including whether or not we think what we're talking, writing, reading, or speaking about is a good idea or not. And when you make the shift from, as you said, from something you didn't care so much about to something you were passionate about, one, that you stop being as afraid to tell people, hey, this is a good idea, because you really think it's a good idea. And also in there, as we were talking about, you know, facing the fear and just going forward anyways, what we realize, and this is a lesson I think we can learn again and again, but what we realize is when you face whatever that fear is and you get through it, and Scott, tell me if you think this is true or not, but the thing that we're so scared of is never, ever, ever as scary as our minds build it up to be when we're putting it off, putting it off, putting it off because we're scared of it. And then when we finally face it and break through it, it's never as bad as we thought it was.
That's very true. That's very true. I find that's just about in every case with just about everything. And that's very, very true.
Well, and what Scott was seeing happening when he finally got results goes back to that bridge rating study that I talk about so often. But it really applies here, so I'm going to talk about it again. Back in 1997, a company called Bridge Ratings did a study, and they asked 10,000 people, if you were looking for a solution to a problem, who would you be most likely to turn to? And the first time they did the study in 97, the answers came back as spiritual leaders, teachers, and then friends, family, and acquaintances. And they repeated the study again in August of 2007, but this time got very different results. When they repeated it, the answers came back, number one, strangers with experience. Number two, friends, family, and acquaintances. And number three, teachers. And the reason for the shift was because of the power of the Internet. And what they saw in the study was that those people who were perceived as strangers with experience, who were really seen by their audience as both experts and influencers, were the people that were getting the lion's share of the business. The difference between what you were doing before and what you were doing later was that you were the expert, the stranger with experience, and the influencer. Whereas before, because you really had to research every single word you said, you really didn't have enough knowledge about it to not research it. That came through in your words. And it really didn't yell out to people, hey, I am the expert. And it was just because you were not authentically the expert that results were not happening.
That's very, very, you said that perfectly. You said that.
Yeah.
I mean, that just is what it is. It's so true. I'm amazed at it even today. I'm so amazed at it. But back then, I was writing a research paper like anybody else who was just researching this information and winding up at my particular blog. Now I have people thanking me and asking me questions, and that's just amazing to me. That I just find that absolutely amazing.
Robert Cialdini has a book out that's called Influence that really talks about what you need to do in order to become an influencer. And there's a big difference between just writing an article on a topic and really being an influencer. And when you're really an influencer, you're much more than just somebody who's talking about a specific topic. That whole story of you that you put out on the Internet, both through your blog and through the social networks that you participate in, becomes the vehicle that you use to let other people perceive you as that influencer. And if you really aren't following something that you are passionate about, you're not going to be able to create your story in a way that people will see you as an influencer. And so this is part of why I teach so often that you've got to follow your passion. Recently, I taught a class for Tom Bell and Sean Casey called the Work at Home Classroom. and it was a one-week course that was live in Daytona Beach. And the students in that course, they didn't necessarily pick their niche. They had some guidance from Tom on doing it, and they kind of got niches that, okay, they would tolerate, but they weren't necessarily experts in, because in Tom's world, the way that Tom drives traffic and the way that Tom builds businesses, it's very different. He uses CPA traffic, cost per acquisition traffic, to drive traffic to mass markets, you know, consumer markets. For him, it's specifically about biz ops. And anything that can lead into a biz op that's ideal for a consumer or a mass market kind of audience, it's going to work. And so for these students, that's the way that they went about picking the topics for their business was, is this going to be good to a, for a lead in to a biz op, and will it fit with a mass market? But then when I came into the picture and I started teaching my blogging system, everybody started immediately saying, well, holy cow, if I'm not an expert in this and if I'm not passionate about it, how can I go about building this business in a way that's actually going to get results? That was a tough issue for every single one of them to deal with that week. And what I really tried to help all of them do was to take these topics that may not necessarily be their passions and harmonize it with their passions. So if you're going into, say, the grant business and you want to help people use money from the U.S. government to do whatever, but you're really not passionate about grants or you really don't know grants, how can you turn grants into something that you are passionate about? So what I had the students do was really sit down and do that same exploration that I teach so many people to do, and that is to make a list of various items. Really take a look at your interests and your competencies. Make a list of all of those interests and competencies that you have that really excite you, the things that can keep you up late at night, wake you up first thing in the morning. Then make a list of all the skills that you have. Make sure that the things that are going on there are the things you really love. So if you happen to knit or crochet, if you happen to golf, if you like swimming, whatever it is, put those skills down. Then take a look at the resources that you have. Even money is a resource. Resources are things like tools. Even knitting needles or crochet hooks or golf clubs can be tools. Woodworking equipment, screwdrivers, miter boxes, they're all tools. And then look at your networking resources. And networking resources are much bigger than just contacts. These are the organizations that you belong to and the people you can meet through those organizations, as well as the people you know and the people they can help you reach. So it's that whole 6 degrees of separation. And once you've made those four lists, go through and see which topics overlap on multiple lists. Those that are on multiple lists are potentially profitable passions. Now you've got to go outside of yourself and go do some research to confirm that, yes, indeed, they can become a profitable passion. As Scott had said earlier, he's got another passion that he really has, but it's not something that's necessarily profitable. So you've got to make sure that from that potentially profitable passion that you're choosing something that you are passionate about. And once these students had made those four lists, I said, okay, now let's take a look at how we can use those with the topic that you've chosen. So if we've got someone interested in grants, then how can you use that in terms of a passion? Well, for that person, it was she really wants to help single moms and help them improve their lives. Well, you narrow down the grant business. You don't just go out and help everybody and anybody to get grants. You use the grants to drive the traffic, but the audience that you are going after is the single moms. And once you've got them through the grants, now you can use anything else that single moms happen to need, want, and buy to help really build the business. So even if you're going after a money niche, you can still harmonize it with your passion, but you've got to be able to uncover those underlying fears before you can do that. So Jennifer, let's talk about some of the other underlying fears that people might have that are holding them back from getting results in their business.
Gina, I'm so glad you brought that up, because really, finding your passions and finding your skills and your resources and everything that you just said is so important. It's a very crucial first or early on step. And once we've done that, then as you said, as Scott pointed out with his story, we're able to start gaining that momentum. However, having said that, we can still have underlying fears that can slow us down. We'll move forward, you know, two steps forward and one step back, hopefully. As opposed
yeah.
One forward and two back. Because we do have underlying fears, or some of the old ones can come up and bite us in the butt, and we'll go, oh, that didn't feel good. Maybe I'm not so good. Maybe I'm not so passionate, or whatever. Unless, as Scott, you said it earlier, unless we recognize that we have a fear and figure out where that fear is coming from. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about some of the different fears that we have that do hold us back. Of course, there's a fear of failure, pure and simple. We've talked about that quite a bit today. Nobody wants to fail. For anybody listening, myself included, probably you, Gina, certainly you, Scott, if you've ever had the fear of failure, you know, think about a time that you've had, oh, my gosh, I might fail, so maybe I'm not going to take action because I might fail. Think about that. Write that down, and then let's break down. What is it that's really behind the fear of failure? More specifically, this has been tremendously helpful for me. If we were to fail in this particular scenario, whatever thing or item we're thinking about that we're afraid of failing at, if we break down what we're really afraid of, first look at what's the worst that can happen. Okay, write that down. What's the best that can happen? Okay, write that down. And more often than not, you'll see that the best that can happen is going to far outweigh the worst that can happen. And furthermore, failing is not such a bad thing. It is. We might fail. In fact, I hope everybody listening today does fail a whole lot, because if you're failing a whole lot, that means you're able to move forward. You're able to learn something, get better at it, and move forward from it. Nobody who has succeeded in a big way has succeeded without first failing many times. Scott, you brought up the example of the baseball players who have a high. What is that? I'm not a baseball player.
No, they've hit the most home runs, but they've also struck out the most amount of times.
Exactly. They failed way more than anybody else, but because they were willing to fail way more than anybody else, willing to keep going at it way more than anybody else, their average is just a bit higher than anybody else, and therefore, you know, they're in the higher levels of success in baseball.
Here's the funny thing that happens, though, Jennifer. I think part of it has to do with your perception and whether you have a positive or negative attitude on things.
Sure.
If I look back in my own life, there's only one big instance that I can look at and say, that was a failure. And that had to do with the college I wanted to get into. Originally, I was supposed to graduate from high school at the end of my junior year. In April of that year, my parents had to sign a permission slip to let me graduate a year early at the age of 16 so that I could go on to college. And I had already applied to college. I had already been accepted at Notre Dame. I was so excited. I was going to my favorite school, the one I'd always wanted to go to. And my parents decided at the last minute that they didn't want me getting out of high school at the age of 16 to be able to go off into college because I was too young, and they refused to sign the permission slip. And so I was forced to go through my senior year, even though my class ring had the earlier year, my class jacket had the earlier year, and I had to give up my seat at Notre Dame. So for the next year, I had to reapply. That happened to be the year that Notre Dame changed their housing requirements for incoming freshmen. The first year when I did it, there was no housing requirement for freshmen. They could take as many women as they wanted. Because of that, they could live off campus if they needed to. The second year I went to apply, they had restricted only people coming in, every person coming in had to live on campus. And they only had 200 dorm rooms for women at the time. Well, the first time I applied, they had taken 1,400 women. I was one of them. The second time, they only took 200 women. I was not one of them. And my whole life went into turmoil as a result. And that is really the only thing I can remember having failed at, that one thing. And because of that failure, when it came time to apply to law school, I really didn't think I wanted to even apply to Notre Dame because, gosh, what if I didn't get in? My mom talked me into doing it anyway, and I made a deal with her that I would have my application have her address on it, and she could get the letter because I didn't even want to know about it. Luckily, I did get in. And, of course, when I did, I threw out all of my tuition, full tuition scholarships to places like Notre Dame and Case Western Reserve. I even had a partial scholarship to Yale to take Notre Dame with no scholarship. But the rest of the things that I have in my life that others would see as failure, in my mind, in my perception, I don't perceive them as failure. And it's a part of why I really haven't had to overcome the fear of failure. For anything that really was a failure, there was always some positive outcome attached to it because I looked for that positive outcome. It wasn't there automatically. I looked for it. And I do this today in everything. I've talked about the story of when I was on my way to a seminar last September and we almost got killed when we hit the bottom of a hill doing 48 miles an hour and had to make a left-hand turn or go into the bottom of the St. George Lake. Huh. Even from that, it was a horrendous experience. It's something that people would have looked at as negative. I saw it as a positive because it caused us to slow down enough that I ended up meeting some people that I never would have met without having had that experience. And in the end, meeting those people ended up bringing in 5 figures extra into my business that never would have happened had I not had that experience. And that's just one example of something that most people would have seen as negative, but I actually sat down and looked for the positive. And to me, even that one incident was a very positive thing because the outcome became positive. You have to learn to look at those things that may have been failures by other people's definitions, even may have been a failure from your own definition, and find the positive within them. Maybe you learned some lesson that you never would have learned without it. Maybe you were brought into contact with someone that you never would have met without it. If you really sit down and look at the other side of it, there is another side of it. And every one of those things that may have been failures are ordinarily simply signs from the universe where the universe is trying to send a message through to you. And you're not necessarily catching on. The universe is really out to protect you. It wants you to go in some other direction. And it doesn't know how to tell you that without stopping you dead in your tracks, which becomes the failure. And if at that moment in time you sat down and said, okay, what's the message? What am I missing? What am I supposed to see? It would allow you to change course quickly, usually fairly easily, and in the process get that much bigger results. And it takes that thing that may have been a quote-unquote failure and turns it into something that really became a launching pad.
Yes, yes. That is so huge what you said, and maybe this is why you are a mentor and have been for some time, that is that you recognize that failure is really a learning opportunity. And you hit on two things that I really want to go into, and I love how the stories that you just told, because number one, you looked at all of these things that you said other people might have looked at as failures, and you decided to look at them as a learning opportunity. You know, when people interviewed Thomas Edison with his light bulb, right? They said, man, you have failed 1,000 times on that thing. Why don't you give up? You look at all those failures you have. And he said, no, what I now have is 1,000 ways that I know a light bulb won't work. So now I'm on to finding the thing that does work. And so the second thing is not only looking for the lesson, but you said other people's perception of failure, which leads to, I think, one of the fears that a lot of people have underlying, which is fear of criticism. What if I do this and other people don't like it or don't like me because of it? And for you, this is one of the cool things about you. Said it the first time I met you, and then the time a year and a half or however long later, I see you as this kick butt woman. And what I mean by that is you are less afraid than the average person of the fear of criticism. What do other people think? And when you look at people who are succeeding, so you, Scott, name anybody who's a success today, one of the biggest things that we have in common is that you are unafraid or less afraid of what other people think. Because when it comes down to it, it's not other people's lives, other people's business. It's your life, it's your business. And so when you're not looking at it from the point of, ooh, what will other people think, but more so, ooh, what can I learn from this? What will make this work? Then you're going to move forward. So
there are only two opinions that matter in my world. The first and the one that matters the most is my own. The second is my husband. He is the only person that could criticize me and cause it to hurt. Anybody else wants to criticize me? That's their prerogative. I mean, I really do see it that way. And my husband gets upset quite often. If someone does criticize me, he takes it to heart. And that gets me a lot because I'm like, it doesn't matter. So what if they want to think that? I can't change anybody else. I can only control myself. And that's a big lesson for people to learn. Most people really struggle to realize that. And they go out living their lives in a way that they're trying to change everybody else. Don't even try. Why waste the energy? It's never going to happen. It's not your job or your responsibility to change anybody else. If you're doing the things that are the right things, and you'll know in your heart if you're doing the right things, then you've got to learn to not let anybody else's opinion matter. And that was something that didn't come easily for me. I really struggled all my life looking for not just approval, but praise in my parents' eyes. I wanted my mom and my dad to be proud of me more than anything else. And it didn't happen very often. I could come home with straight A's on my report card. They'd be like, okay, that's nice. My sister would come home and she'd get straight B's on her report card and she'd get $20. Hey, what's wrong with this picture? They knew that I was capable of straight A's. For my sister, straight B's was a really big deal. And so they would always reward her, where for me, that was what was expected. It wasn't anything over and above what was expected, so the praise didn't come. And I struggled for years trying to come up with a way to get them to really be proud of me. And what I finally realized was, even if they were really proud of me, would it change how I did things?
Right.
Would I do things different? No. Would it somehow make me more money? No. What would it do for me? Nothing. And it was not until I had the realization that having that praise and them really being proud of me wouldn't change anything that I finally could just stop looking for it and just live my life in a way that didn't need to have the praise and the I'm so proud of you. And that also meant I didn't need to worry about criticism either, as long as I was doing things in a way that was really right within my heart.
Yep.
Gina, one thing I'd like to add here. What you're really talking about, when you break it all down, is you're talking about confidence.
Yes, big time, Scott.
And you could do, some people it comes better to, easier to, some people it doesn't come as well to. But that's what you're really talking about, is you're really talking about levels of confidence. And so much has been researched and said and spoken on this, and you could devote shows to this. But that's what you're really talking about, is levels of confidence. If you have a stronger level of confidence, you're going to be more apt to do what you need to do because you're sure about it. You're confident, and you don't care what other people are going to think. If you're timid, you're holding back. You're going to hold back. And it's a lot of, I guess it's called cognitive therapy.
Yes, good point.
Like thinking about it and rationalizing it. And quite honestly, I'll be honest. For me, I'm in my late 40s. It just came now. I don't say it because I'm proud of it. I say it because I just want people to understand that it could come at any time. I mean, I've seen people where it comes, you know, they seem to be born with all the confidence and I don't care what you think, and I'm just going to do it, and I'm just going to go out and win type of mentality, and they're 7 years old, and they go through their whole life like that. But I think for most people, it's not quite that early, and it comes somewhere along the ways. And for me, it just came in my late 40s. It's a confidence level. It's a sureness level. It's a level to take a step to do something, and that's not easy. That's not easy.
That's what it means to be an expert and an influencer instead of just being an expert. That's the difference between the two. The influencer is someone who not only has the experience and knows what to do, but has the self-confidence to go along with it. To me, this is part of why goal setting is absolutely imperative for anybody. Because I have used goal setting to get more done and achieve more since the third grade. When I first started using goal setting, part of why I did it was to have some sort of way to measure my success. Even back in third grade, that was a big deal to me. I didn't want to just have to compare myself to other people. I knew even in the third grade that I had a pretty darn good head on my shoulders. And even in third grade, I was working on fifth and sixth grade math. For me to compare myself to other third graders just didn't seem to make a lot of sense. Because to me, they were just babies. And I'm not trying to be snobbish in saying that. But I could do more. So I needed a way to be able to look at my success and compare myself to something to see what level of success I had. And that's where goal setting came into my world. I started using goal setting so that I could compare myself just to me. The more I accomplished, the more successful I was. And it gave me a way to measure my success that didn't require me to go out and compare myself to other people. You should not need to compare yourself to other people to know that you are successful. Your success is going to be different for you than it will be for me. For you, it might be making $1, where for me, it might be making $1,000.
Correct.
And you've got to have that way of measuring what success means to you.
What I was able, here's one of the reasons that, well, one of the millions of reasons that I love Gina so much, is Gina gave me something on one of our calls which I used till today, and I've actually maybe developed it a little further than she had given me. Gina used the gold star method.
I did, and still do.
Stars to for every time when she had finished the task, and I began to use a similar method like that for every time I had finished the task. And I began to get my confidence when I began to see that I was doing things. When I began to see that I was consistently doing this, consistently doing that, and consistently doing something else, I began to develop more confidence. And that was through a similar to your gold star method. And then I started another thing, the second thing you gave me amongst the millions. I began to realize that my wins weren't always in dollars and cents.
Yes, that's a biggie to see, isn't it?
It's right, yes. Light bulb, baha moment type of thing. And my wins came in the fact that I would consistently do something. And then my wins came in the fact that I would consistently, well, for being online, it was driving traffic. Consistently driving traffic. You know, wow, I had nobody coming to my blog, you know, before, let's say. And today I had 10 people coming to my blog, and tomorrow I had 10 people coming to my blog, and that was a win. That's a win. I didn't make any money, but it was a win. And then all of a sudden, you'd have 20 people coming to your blog on a daily basis. Oh, my God, that's like I'm exploding now. And then you would go further and you would start to see things like comments, interaction, things like that. And you're really winning by what you're doing. And it was little, I got all this from you, by the way, Gina. And it was little wins along the ways which was able to build my confidence to the fact that it just continued to go up the line. And
doesn't getting gold stars become addicting after a while?
Well, I use check marks, but yeah.
Well, whatever, but doesn't it become, it really became addicting for me.
It's very addicting because I like to win. I like to see myself do it. I like to win. And it's just, it's little, for me, I mean, that was for me. And I'm coming a long ways. I'm coming a long ways. Not everybody has to come quite as long as I think I may have had to come. I think Gina thinks may, you know, you may not have had to come as far as I've had to come.
You came a long way, Scott, and that is why I am so proud of you.
Thank you. It's a matter of to build over your fear of success or failure. It really comes down to your mindset. It really comes down to the way you think, and it really comes down to the way you think really comes down to your confidence. And it really depends, it's really the way you see it. If you see it that you started up this blog and it's a month old and you've done minimal work and you know, or even if you've done all your work, even if you've done a lot of work to it and you don't have anything, well, what can you take from this? What is there something positive about it? And if you can see the fact that there's something positive about it, then you can continue getting more positives. Even if they're not cash, which is what we all need and it's the whole way of the world, even if it's not cash, but if you can start to see the fact that you're building blocks, little blocks, you got 10 visitors, maybe you got 15 visitors, maybe you got 20 visitors, it's how you start to build your confidence and move down the road, and then as your confidence builds, it kind of like snowballs and you go on from there. Problem is, a lot of people, it's difficult to see that on your own. But I got that from you, Gina. So.
Well, it's difficult because you're sitting there comparing yourself to others, and if you're not getting as much traffic as, say, Mike Fulsame, then you're a failure. If you're not getting a list the size of Sean Casey's, then you're a failure. It's not realistic to compare yourself to other people. You're comparing apples and oranges. What you're doing is you're comparing yourself only to you, Scott. Now, do you make as much money as some of my other students on a monthly basis?
No.
Absolutely not.
Definitely.
But do I see you as having achieved even more than those students who are making more money than you? Absolutely. Because even for me, I'm not comparing you to them. I'm comparing you to where you started. And if I look at where you started and how far you came, even though you're not making the same kind of money they are, they started further ahead of the game, and they didn't have to come as far. You've come 10 times as far.
It's a lot.
That's what those gold stars are all about.
It's a lot of aspects. It's a lot of aspects, and a lot of it just comes down emotionally.
Mindset is the single biggest key to success, and I say that over and over again because it is.
Yeah, and that's going to be what really takes you past your fear of failure, and that's really where you get past your fear of failure is mindset. If I had taken back in the day when I had worked, when I was talking about offline, putting my letters in the mail, if I had just felt that, just if I had just seen a success by going to the mailbox and just getting it done, the fact that I was doing it, if I was able to, which I wasn't at the time, then I could have built from there. But I just was looking at it, well, if I don't make X amount of dollars, I'm a failure. And that's just not the way, that's just not going to be positive to you. That's just not going to help you. You really need to build on those small successes. That's why I really like a lot of things that I see online, which are not, you know, setting you up for big, big money right away, which are setting you up for smaller wins. I really come from a place where I like to take small baby steps and get small wins, and I just think that.
Well, it's unrealistic. You're not going to go from making zero to making $10,000 in a single month. You might have a single product launch that goes out and happens, but then are you going to make $10,000 again next month? Probably not. So you've got to look at it as your first goal is to make $1. Your second goal is one of the things you just said, Scott, and that's consistency. So your second goal isn't to make $10. Your second goal is to make a dollar a day for a week. Your third goal becomes, okay, now let's make $10, and then let's make $10 a day for a week. Without that consistency in there, you're setting yourself up for peaks and valleys, and you're still not going to have a business that can really provide for you in a way that is secure enough to allow you to leave what you're doing offline to make money. It's got to be consistent. And so what you're doing, Scott, is, are you there yet? No. But because you're focusing on both achieving a slightly higher level and then let's make it consistent, and now let's make it a little bigger still, and now let's make it consistent, you're building this in a way that once it gets to the point of making the money you need to be able to stop doing things offline, it will be doing that consistently so that you really can afford to not be doing as much offline and know that money will still be happening on an ongoing basis.
What's interesting is I have a picture in my mind, but it's not a hope and it's not a dream. It's a real picture of what will be, and it's not a unrealistic, blown out of proportion type of thing either, of how by what I'm doing now, at a certain point I will be at a certain place. Which basically means, well, for me it does mean continuing to work offline because I do like to get out and visit my clientele, but it's only because I will choose to. It means my girlfriend who works with me getting completely out of a job and not even working part-time, things of that nature. You develop some kind of a confidence where you can, is the money there for me 100% living in the Northeast that I need right now? Not quite. But I know that by continuing to do what I need to do on a daily basis and recognizing the small wins along the ways, and they just seem to be coming whether I want them or not, I know that at a certain point, and I have that set in my goals, that I'm just going to get to where I need to be at a realistic spot. It's just a
Well, I want you to add something to that picture. In that picture that you are clearly seeing in your mind, I want you to have a wall that has a calendar on it, and I want to have you have that date that this is going to happen by on that calendar with a big circle around it so that you will achieve that image by that date.
The date is a great idea because if I did not get to that point. It gives you a time frame. It gives you a time frame, and I like that, and I will use that, Gina. Thank you.
Well, visualization was something else that I know I taught you. And visualization, really seeing what success looks like to you, can help you to succeed in spite of yourself. If you're really using the mindset things we've talked about today, you're using the goal-setting things we've talked about today, and then you're incorporating visualization where you're really seeing what success looks like. All of the little details in that visualization have got to be planned out. This was something that I experienced through my miraculous transformation in a way that was so powerful it became life-altering. I really didn't pay enough attention to the little details in that visualization. What I was visualizing was a woman who was happy, who was healthy, who was walking down the street, who was well-dressed, who had great jewelry, who was clearly living the life of her dreams, having the time of her life. She had a full head of hair. She had long, gorgeous painted nails. Well, I didn't plan all of that into the visualization. It just became what I saw. The only part that I had planned was the happy, healthy walking. All the details just happened by accident. And yet, every single one of the details occurred, kind of magically, if you really want to be honest about it. I was much thinner in the visualization than I was in the mirror. In the mirror, I wore a size 22 or a 24. In the visualization, I wore a size 12. Well, I lost 68 pounds without going on a diet. And I became the woman in the visualization. The great clothes, the great jewelry, the doing great things required money. my business exploded almost overnight, even though that hadn't been one of my concrete goals that I had on my list. I was just trying for happy, healthy walking. So if you incorporate all of your senses and all of the details into that visualization, what my experience showed me was it will happen. Then it just becomes a matter of taking action. And if you're doing the right things, that visualization will be your reality. It happens that way every time.
What happens?
So by adding that calendar, it will happen by that date.
I'm going to start that today, Gina. I will add that to my visualization today. I have 2 points to add, though. I have a point and a question. Is what happens is the mind cannot tell the difference between reality and what's not reality. And when
right. The
mind sees to see that, you know, you're a certain way, well, that's the way the mind begins to create the way that you are. The mind cannot tell the difference. The brain cannot see the difference between just, you know, doing what you need to do, the way you saw yourself and reality, and you begin to really be the way you visualize yourself because the brain cannot tell the difference. My question for you, Gina, is when you talk about visualization, do you suggest writing any of this down or just visualizing it? I mean, should this be written down?
Both. So first step is to put an intention out in the way of an affirmation, and that I do suggest writing down. Actually sit down and write down in the form of an affirmation what your intention really is. The second part in the visualization, really you're wanting to do 5 to 10 minutes twice a day, both right before you go to sleep at night and right when you wake up in the morning. It's that time where your subconscious and your conscious mind is closest together. And by doing these visualizations, those 2 times a day, it really amplifies that message to your brain. And even going forward and taking the visualizations that you're doing twice a day and using them to create a vision board that has pictures that symbolize that same message to you, and leaving that in a place where you will see it often all day long. So the desktop of your computer is a good place for it. The wall next to your desk is a good place for it. But make sure that you've got all of the details in that vision board as well. Leaving pieces out just because you can't find the picture will actually cause them to not occur. So you've got to make sure you've got all of it in there. And then both make yourself attractive to those things you want to attract. If you were homeless and your vision was you driving a Mercedes-Benz, well, you're going to have to get yourself a little bit attractive to that Mercedes-Benz. Clean up your act a little bit. Start looking like a Mercedes-Benz owner. And then taking action. You've got to take some baby step in some direction in order to set the ball in motion. Now, there's usually many different first steps that you can choose from. What determines which you choose is the amount of passion that you have for that specific topic. The more passionate you are about it, the more likely you will be to choose a shorter, smoother path to that end destination. The less passionate you are, the more likely you will be to choose a longer, bumpier path. All of those paths lead to the same place. They just have different journeys along the way. Some of them smooth, some of them deep, some of them long, some of them short. The more passionate you are, the easier that journey will be. And once you've taken that action, continuing to do the visualizations will allow you to attract it every single time. Repeat both the affirmation and the visualizations every single day. Don't let days go by. The more of that you do, the sooner you will attract what you're trying to attract.
That's fantastic. I mean, that is just, I can't even come up with the words. That is the most important thing you can do. It's you know, you can go out there, and we're all working online, and you can Twitter and Facebook and socialize and write your blog and do everything you need to do. But if you just don't believe it, if it doesn't, if it's not in your head and you don't believe it consciously and subconsciously, it's not going to work.
And if you don't have a clear picture of what the outcome means to you, it's not going to work either.
Yeah, and that's to you. And that's
right, to you.
To you. And everybody's different. And it just, this is more important than I think. See, this is why I introduced myself to you, Gina, and I came to you in the first place, because I don't believe anybody can tell me, to socialize or to put out this website or do it this way or do it that way, but I believe this is the most important thing in anything you do. This is where people miss the step, and this is where it doesn't happen, and then it's, the other stuff is not going to work. And
right.
Do this, everything will fall in, it begins to fall into place. This is the most crucial step in life, be it no matter what you're doing. If it was you, Gina, trying to get better, or if it was just someone online trying to make a few dollars, doesn't matter what you're doing, but this is the most important step. I'm very, very passionate about what you're saying.
Well, you've heard me say this before. If you've got the right mindset with all of these things, the goal setting, the visualization and whatnot, you've got all of that in place, and you're taking some action, you will get results, period. I don't care if you do it all wrong. On the other hand, do everything right with the wrong mindset and without the visualization and without the goal set, no matter how perfect of a job you do, you are not going to get results. And that's really exactly what you saw, Scott.
Exactly.
That is what you were dealing with.
Exactly.
Until you could overcome that mindset piece and really get rid of those underlying fears, no matter how perfect what you did was, Facebook, Twitter, blog, whatever, it still was not going to get results.
Yeah, and I still think that my blogging is good, but nobody knows, everything, and I certainly could learn a lot more. And it's just, once I changed my mindset, people started coming to me. I couldn't help it. As I said, people started wanting to be a part of my blog, whether I liked it or not. I could have refused, of course I'm not going to, but people started coming to me, and for me, it was amazing. I was just, I'm coming from such a long distance in what we're talking about, that to me, when I saw people coming to me, and people were coming to me with other things too, beyond just wanting to buy things. I had manufacturers coming to me wanting to sample products.
Wow.
Things of that nature. And when I saw stuff like that, I was like just blown away. I was just blown away because I am coming from such a long distance. And when I had right now I'm working with a paint manufacturer, and they're thinking about putting out a new product, and they wanted me to sample it, and
Now, how did they find you? I've got to find that out. How did they find you?
Well, just doing what I needed to do. That was my blog. That was my blog and everything you teach. I basically do what you teach, and that was just everything you teach. I'm not quite...
So they were just seeing you in social networks, and they were finding you in the search engines, and they were coming to you.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was just by doing what I needed to do. And
so there's two pieces that are implied in there that I think we want to be explicit about. Number one, you were using the right words to allow those things to happen, because otherwise they never would have found you when they went out searching for someone.
Right.
No, and so that comes down to keywords, the right keywords to get to the right audience. Number two, when they did get there, you had a way for them to contact you. Because if they didn't have a way to contact you, no matter how much they wanted to find you, they never would have.
That's correct. You need to have the right technical aspects of your business also. You need to have your way to get to you and things of that nature. But that all really begins with having the right mindset in the first place and not being afraid of failing, putting your stuff out there, doing it. And that's really what you're saying in the first place. I have another woman, I have a couple of them actually, who've written books they want me to promote, things of that nature. I didn't ask for any of this.
I was coming to this point because I've seen a lot of people who say, well, I don't know if I really want to put my own name out there. Isn't that dangerous? And they're afraid of putting this blog together and doing the things that they need to do because they don't necessarily want to use their name out there in this way. Jennifer, do you know what I'm talking about here?
Not at all. Never thought that myself. Never been afraid of it. Okay, I'm being sarcastic. Absolutely. Absolutely. I've had that fear, and as have clients of mine in the past, and it's something to overcome, right? Because I'm not, you know, I'm not a well-known CEO or famous book author or whatever. But guess what? None of us are going to become that unless we do the things and take the steps to get there, which includes, I love what you said about this, Scott. You got to do the little things that are going to create those successes to build that confidence, to then do bigger things to create more confidence to get to where it is that you want to go.
Exactly.
So this one I see most often with people who are still working a 9-to-5 job, who don't want their employers to necessarily know that it's them. They're like, oh, well, you know, if I'm out there doing this thing with liquid nutritionals, aren't they, isn't my boss going to get mad? Well, my point to them is if this is one of your fears, it's really a big message that's telling you you're probably not in the right niche. Because if you were in the right market and if you were doing the right things, this fear wouldn't be there in the first place. There's something about what you're doing that is causing you to not feel like you can attach your name to it, which also means you're not going to be authentic in doing it. Chances of you being successful with whatever it is you're doing, if you've got this fear of attaching your name to it in a way that really gets your identity as an expert and influencer put out there, not very high. So if you've got that thing holding you back that's saying, oh, well, I don't want anybody to know that that's me, go find something else to do because that's probably not the right thing.
That's very true.
Yep.
Very true.
And I just want to put this out there about breaking through just that fear. And now I'm just speaking from personal experience. And I've seen this in many people that I've worked with or friends, or you can read it in books over and over again, and that is this. When you're afraid of that, again, you know, so that goes back to, ooh, what are they going to think of me? Who, you know, who are they to put themselves out there as an expert or whatever, right? Well, you know what, who cares is the first part of that. The second part is, of course, you've got to do your research. You've got to experience to the table or whatever. Make sure that you're really serving your readership and whatnot. But once you know that you're really going to serve them, you're going to do everything you can to do that, then move forward with it. Stop worrying about what other people will think or not think, and move forward. And I would like to suggest that once you conscientiously say, I'm not going to worry about what other people think, I'm going to make these decisions based on what my heart says I should do, what my head says I could do, not worrying about what other people do, you're going to find that you make better decisions. You're going to find that other people like you, you like them more, they like you more, they start coming to you, as Scott pointed out. And so for those of us who are sitting here who are maybe sometimes afraid of doing something, whatever it is, I'd like to suggest practice being a little bit fearless. Do it in little things that don't matter. And once you see, face those little fears, whatever they are, do little brave things. It might be picking up the phone. It might be, I don't know, doing some sports activity. Whatever it is, do a little thing that's practice facing a fear. Once you see that you succeed with that, then go do a bigger thing and a bigger thing, and then recognize, gosh, if I could face that fear and get through it, I can come back over here to this thing that's more important to me, face that fear, move forward, move through it, and grow bigger and better.
And,
well, this was a call that I have wanted to do for a very long time, and I've got to say thank you so much, Scott, for letting me have you here as a guest to do this call. Thank you, Jennifer, for coming up with the topic. If you want to learn more about how you can achieve miraculous things in your life, take a look at the Miracle Motivational Package at www.abundantpositivity.com. You'll really be able to learn how to use goal setting to achieve more and how to overcome anything in your life to really get the results you're looking for. Having looked death square in the face, trust me, there's not a lot of things that can scare me anymore. And that's what the Miracle Motivational Package is all about. It has really been a pleasure and an honor to have you guys here with me today. Again, we'll be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. I really look forward to having you back with me again at some point, Scott, so we can talk about even bigger results that you're getting.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, everybody, and see you next week.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.